You're tuned to Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station.
Radio Atlanta, on our very first day, our Champers Day, bringing you brighter broadcasting and the finest sounds around.
Within the next few minutes, some lucky Radio Caroline listener could win as much as 1,560 quid.
This is Radio Caroline International.
This is the new Radio Caroline.
Mi amigo, mi amigo, mi amigo.
Radio Caroline.
This is not just a story about a radio station. It's about an idea that revolutionized the structure of radio in the United Kingdom and influenced the development of the British record market. It's a story about disc jockeys, engineers, pop groups, advertisers, and millions of radio listeners. For this is the story of Radio Caroline.
Caroline, the sound of the nation. Caroline, the sound of the land. Caroline, the sound of the nation.
The man who started Radio Caroline was an Irish businessman. His name, Ronan O'Rahilly.
I had been involved in the music business quite heavily. I got involved with... in fact, I remember it well. I was involved in the club game, and then a friend of mine, a guy called Giorgio Gomelski, came to see me and said, come and listen to a band, you know. So off I went and I listened to a band called Alexis Corner Rhythm Blues Band. And in that band there was Charlie Watts on drums, later joined the Stones. There was Jack Bruce. We then, Ginger Baker joined the band when Charlie Watts left. And, but that was how I first sort of got a taste of the music scene. I discovered then that when I brought another artist I was working on called Georgie Fame, I bought a recording of Georgie around to a number of the record companies. In fact, a number. There were two record companies that counted then, EMI and Decca, and they had a total monopoly of the industry. They owned the distribution outlets, and they controlled... as I later found out, they controlled every piece of airtime on Radio Luxembourg. I mean, 70% of it. There were two other small companies, Pye and Phillips, who had, I think between them, about 12% of the market or something, because they had a little bit of airtime on Luxembourg. They had about equivalent amount of time. And no other record company could break that. I mean, it was an absolute solid monopoly. So I went to the two companies, EMI and Decca, with the recording of George, and I was told them, you know, both places that it was too early for coloured singers in Britain, which I was amused by, considering he was a Lancashire lad. Anyway, I then decided, right, I'm going to record him myself and go that route. You know, I wasn't conscious at all, by the way, at this point of the monopoly. I just thought they just happened to be four record companies, and I didn't tie up anything else with it until I found myself sitting in Luxembourg with an acetate of Georgie and asking the then Luxembourg people, how many plays can you give me on this on this artist. I'm going to bring it out on my own record company. And the guy sort of almost fell off the chair laughing, you know, that anyone could be so ignorant or naive or whatever you like to call it. And he showed me these charts and wall boards on the wall with EMI show, Decca show, EMI show, Decca show, EMI show, Decca show. I mean, it was just absolutely... And then a tiny little Pi show and a tiny little Philips show down at the end, you know. So that virtually the entire Luxembourg airtime. So I went to the Beeb then, and the Beeb said they only played established artists on their one program a week or whatever it was. I can't even remember now. But I know they had, I think, a Top of the Pop show and one or two other shows. I mean, there was so little exposure in the UK at that time. I mean, during the day, you just couldn't hear pop music. I mean, it was just barren, you know. We went on and, you know, at this point, and I thought to myself, my God, this isn't... And I remember sitting to the guy, because my mind just worked logically. And I said, well, look, if that is the case, then obviously... The next step is to, if you're not going to give me airtime, the next thing is to start a radio station. The next logical, you know, as you go through each stage, you have an artist that you think should have exposure. You go to the first stage and you find that, you know, the record companies don't want to, so you have to start your own record company. And then you find that if you have your own record company, nobody will play the thing because it's all tied up in a monopoly situation. You go to the next step, which is you start a radio station. And I said it to them there in that very morning. I mean, I wasn't sort of thinking about it for, you know, for 6 weeks. I just said, bang, bang, that's what you've got to do.
Caroline, the sound of the nation.
Caroline, the sound of the land. Caroline, the sound of the nation. Caroline!
I was very plugged into the Kennedys, right? I was a big, big fan of the Kennedys. From 1959, when I first sort of saw John Kennedy on television, you know, dialoguing and laying down the just the whole vibe of him was you know, got me like it got millions of other people all over the world. And I remember traveling across the States to buy the transmitter gear, and I remember having this Look magazine or Life magazine, and there was a picture of Caroline Kennedy disrupting government. I remember that was the sort of... She was in the cabinet room or in his office or something. There was a meeting going on and she sort of climbed out from under the desk and disrupted everything, right? And instead of Jack Kennedy sort of having one of his aides, you know, get rid of her, I'm in an important meeting, he got involved with her, leaving, you know, all these serious, powerful men sitting around twiddling their thumbs. You know, that was the story behind that. And the photograph that actually they had spread across the page, if I remember, was her climbing out from under the desk, sort of all smiles, and the headline was Caroline, you know, upsets the apple cart, you know? I mean, that kind of imagery. It was the smile, the whole idea of... you know, the whole Kennedy kind of idea, which was to break new ground, to open new, to expand, you know, etc. To, you know, just a whole kind of the best of free enterprise with a lot of soul, you know. In other words, you know, that combination, which I think, you know, I've always thought was a very healthy combination. And it was just that whole imagery, and it was the headline, the Caroline thing, and I said, bang, that's it.
Caroline, sound of a nation. Caroline, sound of a land. Caroline, the sound of a nation. Caroline.
I later discovered, for instance, the most popular name in England, in fact, the most popular girl's name in England is Caroline.
Simon D. explains.
We flew from Heathrow with a guy called Chris Moore, who was a sort of early program director, American friend of Ronan's, and we flew from Heathrow to Dublin, and then we drove on the coast road right up to Greenore, where I always remember it was the evening, and we came over a slight hill, and looking down on the port of Greenore, it sounds terribly romantic, but it really was beautiful, and way down the bottom was this slender steel needle, which was the mast of Caroline, which is about 120 feet high. And that's where we started work on fitting out the first boat to get there, which was Ronan's boat, the Baltic ferry boat, Caroline. When we were there, coming over from Texas was the Mi Amigo, which was Crawford's boat. Well, we were getting on with the ship. We were gradually getting it together. And then on the horizon came the Mi Amigo, which had managed to batter its way across the Atlantic in appalling weather, saying, "Hey, you ready for us? Here we are. We want a bit of this number. We want a bit of this harbor. And we want to be fitted out too, of course." See? So they then developed rather a bit of, slightly unacceptable behavior from all of us, because the basic thing was here were two ships at one port, and both independent bosses, Ronan and Alan, both wanted the London anchorage. There were going to be two anchorages. There was going to be one off Frinton, and there was going to be one off the Isle of Man. Consequently, we were covering the whole of the UK. But both of us knew that the London anchorage up the Thames estuary was the richer of the two as far as commercials were concerned. So we both were aiming for this, so we both wanted to finish first. Well, Mi Amigo anchored behind us in Greenore, and one night we did a commando raid on board because the Mi Amigo had what were called spotmaster cassettes. And we didn't have spotmasters, folks. And spotmaster cassettes bring up commercials instantly. So you can sort of do amazing things and sound terribly professional. We didn't have any of these, so we mounted a Red Beret raid. Unfortunately, we weren't very good, because we were caught on board the ship by hordes of shrieking Dutch sailors, who were probably drinking hordes of Dutch gin, too. Anyway, it was a hell of an amazing scene. And sort of spotmasters were being clutched, and people were swearing each other in various languages. So we turned out of Greenore, having fitted out the ship and with the crew on board. There was Chris Moore and myself. Chris Moore and myself were the only two voices on board, as far as I can remember, English voices. There were lots of Dutch people there, crew, electronics engineers, and the captain. We sailed away from Greenore, and this was on the Monday of Easter week, 1964. And then at exactly 7 o'clock on Good Friday evening, 1964, we dropped anchor. And it was dark. It was black. It was blowing a gale. The rain was coming down. It was amazing. And we could only see a few flashing lights ashore. People were running around the ship. And we decided, of course, knowing that we were going on air the following day, Easter Saturday, we'd have to test. We tested the equipment, and it seemed to work. It was pitch black. And we went to bed. Not that we really slept. We got up in the morning, and we had the tapes ready. In the control cabin. We were not going to do live records because we weren't too sure of the equipment in the sea rocking. So we had tapes for the first transmission, but we had to go live. The actual first announcement had to be live, obviously. So we waited for it to get light. Anyway, it was getting closer to the time. The gale was still going. I was reasonably nervous, of course. Everyone was nervous. Everything was ready. It was 11:30, and we checked the sig tune of Caroline, which was Jimmy McGriff playing Round Midnight, which was the code music of the station. We checked that a couple of times. I think the playing time of that track was something like 3 minutes 35, so allowing 30 seconds or so for speech. We started it at 4 minutes to noon. It finished at 30 seconds to noon. Then I flipped the live switch and I said, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station. We're transmitting music from now until 6 o'clock this evening, and a whole lot of other rhubarb, I said. I can't remember. And one of the big 12-inch spools of tape started moving, and I cut myself out, and zap. And Caroline was on the air.
And when finally, you know, 12 o'clock arrived, and suddenly, you know, in she came. It was amazing. It wasn't amazing. I mean, you can't really describe the feeling. It's an impossible thing to describe.
Of course, together with this first transmission, we had the famous Caroline Bell, which was one of the characteristic sounds of the early days of Caroline. We'd bought a bell, and it figured on our publicity material, and that was ding, 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 ding. And that was always the case. Whenever we did any station breaks or changed programs in those first days, we always had the bell on a Spotmaster. And we know how we got those. So we were able to put the bell in.
The time is 3 o'clock, and you are listening to a program from Radio Caroline.
I knew in my own head that it was going to catch on. I had no doubt about that at all.
Radio Caroline opened this weekend. The ship can be seen from Felixstowe Beach. It started broadcasting on the 28th of March on 199 meters and closed down at 6 p.m. It resumed broadcasting at 6 a.m. next morning. It's understood it'll continue to broadcast 12 hours non-stop programming of pop and light music.
For the first time in British history, the BBC radio monopoly had been shattered. Radio Caroline was playing what the listeners wanted, non-stop music. It gave tremendous exposure to unknown artists, and its effect could very soon be seen through the national record charts. But to millions of listeners, it was just great entertainment.
Caroline Sure Shot!
What do the Caroline DJs look like? Well, you know the voices, but what about the faces? Well, of course, when you join the Caroline Club, your problem is solved. Membership automatically entitles you to photographs of Caroline's disc jockeys. And if the one you want isn't in your initial Caroline Club membership packet, there's a special service at Caroline House to give club members all the information they require. Join now. Send 5 shillings to Caroline Club, Membership Department, 6 Chesterfield Gardens, London, West One.
You may not find us on your TV, because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by, brought to you one, brought to you by RADI.
Johnny Desmond there with the theme from the recently released picture from 20th Century Fox, Rio Conchos. And we are very lucky to have a couple of the stars from that very movie in the cast.
After only a few days on the air, Radio Caroline's London office received thousands of letters. An estimated 7 million listeners were tuning in every day.
The reaction to Caroline was unbelievable. I mean, we discovered that we had, within like 10 days, 7,200,000 listeners. I mean, actual listeners in that period.
We didn't really know how many people. We hoped a few thousand, but we had no conception. On the first day that the tender arrived, It drew up alongside. There was a very heavy swell, I always remember, and the tender was almost coming up level with the deck. It was so high, and then it would sink right down again alongside the side of Caroline, and up it would come again. And getting on and off that was quite a tricky operation sometimes. But this occasion came, and I looked over the edge of the ship, and down on the tender's deck were sacks and sacks and sacks of vegetables that we wanted. Anyway, they brought all this stuff on board, and it wasn't vegetables, it was mail. Sacks and sacks and sacks of mail. And then it was then that I learnt the power of radio, really direct radio. It was a truly staggering example of immediate rapport.
Caroline, son of the nation!
The immediate reaction of the government was to declare that the station was illegal. But in fact, any ship broadcasting from outside territorial waters is a perfectly legal enterprise under international convention. On the 9th of May, 1964, another radio station joined Caroline in its fight against the monopoly.
Radio Atlanta, Britain's second pirate radio station anchored off Frinton-on-Sea, Essex, began broadcasting on Saturday night.
On 201 metres, this is Radio Atlanta, and the time is 6 o'clock. That's the show. Enjoyed your company, hope you enjoyed the music. Be back with you at 1 o'clock tomorrow for headline hits. Till then, from your man with the music, Tony Withers, see you around.
Alan Crawford rang me. He used to be an awfully nice fellow as managing director of Southern Music in Australia. And he used to call me, as all the boys did, because I was, the big boy in Australia. But you make your friends. Ken East, who was EMI, and just recently managing director of EMI here for the world, was a great serving mate of mine. Alan Crawford was a good fellow. Lots of fun and into the pub and everything. And he said, I'm going to do this thing, which quite astounded me. Then as he talked, I could see the potential of it. And I remember Easter, when Caroline opened, we were absolutely flabbergasted. And in beating, it's got £1 million of publicity, because there's no doubt about it, not only here in Britain, but the whole world, when they think of pirate radio, they think of Caroline.
Radio Atlanta's programmes were being beamed from the MV Mi Amigo, a 470-ton ship that had previously been used by a Swedish pirate station called Radio Nord. On the 2nd of July, 1964, a merger of the two stations was announced.
The directors of Project Atlanta and Planet Productions Limited today issued a joint statement announcing a merger between Radio Atlanta and Radio Caroline. The companies are responsible for the advertising and selling of time on the two offshore commercial radio stations. Mr. Alan Crawford, Managing Director of Project Atlanta, and Mr. Ronan O'Reilly, Managing Director of Planet Productions, will become joint Managing Directors of the new operation. The ship broadcasting the present Radio Caroline programs, MV Caroline, will sail to the Isle of Man tomorrow morning to a position 5 miles from Ramsey, Isle of Man. It'll continue to broadcast Radio Caroline programs on the way to its destination and remain on 199 meters medium wave. The ship broadcasting the present Radio Atlanta, MV Mi Amigo, will continue broadcasting from its present position to the Greater London area and Southeast England under the national call sign Radio Caroline.
One night, we upped anchor. Suddenly the engine started. What? Engine starting? What's happening? My goodness, and the throb throughout the ship and everything starts to quiver, shine, and then it slows down. And this was about 10 o'clock at night, and suddenly we're moving. And we go down the coast, we turned round, and we came up behind Atlanta. I can remember I was right up on the bow, watching everyone doing things, and we tied up to the stern of Atlanta, and people jumped off our ship and went in to see the captain. And they were there for about an hour, drinking more Dutch gin and everything. Cut a long story short, we were on 199 metres and Atlanta was on 197 or something like this, very small difference in frequency. And we were going to change crystals. Our 199 crystal was going to be given to Atlanta, and Atlanta was going to give Caroline 197. Atlanta would stay anchored in the south of East England. As far as they are concerned, transmitting on 199 with my voice and a few other people's voices, so that as far as the public were concerned, nothing had changed, but as far as we were concerned, the whole ship had changed. Whereas our ship, now adopting Atlantis Crystal, was taking Atlantis crew, was sailing back to the Isle of Man, and it was going to anchor and open up Northwestern Broadcasting. And the next day, we upped anchor, sailed past Atlanta, dropping off myself, another disc jockey called Doug Carr, and a whole lot of records and gear, and then it sailed on, leaving us to and we took the crystal with us. When we got to Atlanta, of course, it wasn't geared for records, it was geared for tape, and we had no needles to play records. And the Caroline was disappearing down the channel, away, and we were sitting on this boat with no needles. And we went to the captain, who didn't like this deal. He was quite happy sitting on his ship, drinking gin with a few tapes going. He didn't have any freaks rushing around with records and requests and everything. So he says, needles? What needles? We have no needles. No needles. We said, of course you've got needles. No. We have never got the needles on the ship. Well, for about 4 hours, right, until he got really stoned, he wouldn't give us the needles. Eventually, at 3 o'clock in the morning, he gave us the needles. And at 6 a.m., we had to go on the air as Radio Caroline on 199. Ding, ding, your all-day music station on a completely new ship with new needles, new equipment, all our big LP collection gone on Caroline. We just took the top 20 with us so we could keep the kids amused, right, with the top 20 material, top 50 or something like that. And a few LPs that I had clutched under each arm as we jumped ship. And at 3 o'clock, he gave us the needles. And so... I think it was by literally something like 20 to 6 that morning. We finally got the needles wired up. I think eventually with chewing gum, we eventually did the wiring on the arms. Doug was chewing gum all the time and passing it to me, and I was sticking it. I'd say, chew some more. And at 6 o'clock, we went on the air, and the great British public had no idea that in the previous 48 hours we changed crystals, crews, needles, all that. And that's what happened, and that's how Atlanta became Caroline South, and how Caroline became Caroline North, and we never saw each other again.
Radio, a go-go.
From the north of England, you're in line with the go-go boys of Caroline.
Big bye, wonderful Willie, of the Deafy Dirty Illia!
Funny! Puerto Rico was much bigger than the Mi Amigo. The living conditions were much better on there. We had our own private cabin, various other things that we had on that boat that we didn't have on the Mi Amigo. And I found that I'm not being prejudiced when I say this now, but I found that the people up north were much friendlier. The mail absolutely trebled from the south. And I discovered that after coming off the ship and visiting places like Liverpool, Blackpool, and various places like that, we were treated like gods, you know. And I spent about 2.5 years with the happiest years of my life on this ship.
Caroline's men of a new breed.
Music, that's our middle name.
Jerry Super Layton.
Daffy Don Allen.
Baby Bob Stewart.
Mick loves it.
Tony the Prince.
Jerry King.
They're Caroline's men of a new breed. The men who make radio active.
Music, that's our middle name. Music.
It was not long before other pirate stations came on the air, like Radio Such, Radio Invicta, and Radio King. But Caroline did not face any serious commercial competition until the highly Americanized Radio London arrived off Walton-on-the-Naze shortly before Christmas 1964. It dropped anchor just a mile away from the MV Mi Amigo.
Wonderful!
And in the following year, more stations arrived, each with a different format.
Around the clock,
the best in music. Turn to us around the clock for news and information. Turn to us around the clock for sounds of the smart set. Now don't you forget, turn to Hallmark of Quality Britain Radio.
Terry Bate, Caroline's sales manager, takes up the story.
I travel back and forth for 10, 12 consecutive weekends looking at England, talking to agencies, listening to radio, before we actually made the decision to get involved. And the main point was that radio had no believability, great deal of amateur enthusiasm on air, no professionalism, particularly in the sales operation. And this was the biggest single lack. And this was kind of the first job. It was to produce some kind of professional sales organization.
Bang on target with Caroline Sales. Sell on Radio Caroline now and count the profits later. Caroline can sell your business, your service, to millions for as little as £10 a time. Radio Caroline reaches people all hours of the day, at home, at work, in the car. They'll hear your message. They'll buy your product. Sell on Radio Caroline now. Contact Caroline Sales, 6 Chesterfield Gardens, London, West 1. Ring Hyde Park, 9721.
The brief was to make Caroline make money, which initially, although they had obviously great success in audience, the revenue didn't entirely match the audience. And as commercial operation, it was not entirely the most successful at that stage of the game. And the brief was very simple: to do whatever is necessary to make money, whether it be bring in revenue or cut down costs. The general attitude of agencies was that, and advertisers, was that, okay, it exists, a lot of people out there, we don't know if it works, we'll throw a few quid of the client's money in, if it works we can be a hero, if not, what the hell. And radio, which certainly went against my grain, was considered to be a poor cousin to everything else that was around.
Four kinds of Sunsilk shampoo.
One is for you.
Four kinds of Sunsilk shampoo, because there are four kinds of hair. What's your hair type? Normal? Then you need clear golden Sunsilk to keep it lovely. Greasy and lank, you need deep cleansing Sunsilk Lemon. Lots of girls have dry hair. Do you? You need gentle Sunsilk with lanolin cream. And if your hair's just a little bit dull, Sunsilk Tonic will give it a beautiful shine. So whatever type of hair you have, there's a Sunsilk shampoo to make it more beautiful.
Four kinds of Sunsilk shampoo.
Cash Casino was probably the first programming and sales thing that we put together. There was no in-depth research. There was no believability amongst agencies that it actually sold any product. Cash Casino was designed to do one very simple thing, and that was to prove that we could sell some merchandise. We packaged it in 5 segments, and we asked for labels or reasonable facsimiles. We ran the first flight for 11 weeks and pulled millions and millions of labels and letters and so on, and we dumped them on clients' front lawns to prove that we could sell merchandise, etc., etc., etc.
Within the next few minutes, some lucky Radio Caroline listener could win more than £3,320. So let's play Caroline Cash Casino. Presented by these quality products: Ventus Frozen Foods, Libby's, Weetabix, and Alberto VO5 Shampoo. This segment is brought to you by Findus Frozen Food. And so we go into our second letter, get it open here, and inside we find the correct enclosure, Findus Garden Peas, And our letter comes from Mrs. S. Montserrat, Ruskin, Albion Crescent, Chow Font St. Giles in Bucks. And this is beautifully typewritten, I must say. It says, after considering all the clues so far, and with the help of a patient husband, I think that they lead to Jeff Hurst, who played such an important role in the winning of the World Cup for England. That is it! By golly, it is! Oh, my heavens! Yes, 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 that is it! Congratulations, Mrs. Shirley Montserrat. You have won for yourself £3,330. By golly, the excitement is just too much for me. Oh, heavens, what are you going to do with all of that money? Gosh, £3,330 for Mrs. S. Montserrat right here on the Findus Frozen Food segment on a merry old Monday morning, November 21. And I guess that's going to be a date you'll long remember, Shirley, isn't it? Gosh, that's it, £3,330. Now, let me see, what could I do with £3,300? Oh, well, I can't bear to think about it. But anyway, congratulations to you, Shirley. And, oh, it's wonderful that you have won all that money. Gosh, wowee, that does it. And once again, let's extend congratulations to Mrs. Shirley Montserrat of Ruskin, Albion Crescent, Chalfont St. Giles in Bucks. And, of course, we'll be telling you tomorrow, which is Tuesday, all about our next contest, which will be Caroline Cash Casino Contest Number 3. And we'll give you the initial clues for this third contest. And we hope, well, we extend our wishes that you win, because this is strictly a game that is dependent entirely upon the luck of the draw. Gosh, I'm going to have to sit back for a spell and just sort of sweat this one out, because I'm so excited about it all. So once again, congratulations, Shirley, and you have won yourself £3,330. Yes, play Caroline Cash Casino 5 times a day, Monday through Saturday, with the makers of these quality products: Findus Frozen Foods, Libby's Products, Weetabix, and Alberto VO5 Shampoo. Join us in the fun with those fantastic prizes to be won. We'll be back in an hour for Libby's Products.
But Cash Casino was only one of 6, 7, 8 promotions that were running at any moment in time.
What's your line? Do you sell... or... or for that matter... whatever you... Radio Caroline can sell it for you. Caroline can advertise everything from... to... or even... if that's the sort of business you're in, let Caroline do the selling for you. Millions of people listen to Caroline every day. Send them your message. Contact Caroline Sales. Give them a... on Hyde Park 9721 or... at 6 Chesterfield Gardens, London, West 1. But a word of warning, if you're selling... there's nothing we can do for you.
Things went fairly smoothly for both the Radio Caroline ships until the evening of the 20th of January 1966, when Caroline South, the MV Mi Amigo, broke away from its moorings. Radio Caroline's shipping agent, Bill Scadden, played an important part in the rescue operation. He explains what happened.
The Coast Guard rang me up at about 20 past 8 to say they'd been taking some bearings on the Caroline, and they were convinced that she was drifting. I took my car onto the greensward at Brinton and tried flashing them with my headlights unsuccessfully. I happened to know that the crew mainly looked at ITV. So I phoned ITV and said, could they flash something on the screen addressed to the ship, Mi Amigo, to tell them they were drifting. And at 20 past nine, they did so. And that was the first the ship knew she was drifting, by which time she was opposite the golf club here. And she had rather low-powered diesels. The temperature was nearly freezing. And the diesels were started by compressed air. It was then found that the bottles of compressed air were nearly empty. They couldn't start the diesels. They eventually did, with the aid of a torch and all the rest of it, by which time she was almost on the beach. By the grace of God, she came in between two breakwaters, the only one of many between Frinton and Holland-on-Sea, where there was one had been taken out for some nautical purpose. And the result is she didn't crash into a concrete breakwater, but came up onto the beach, which is soft sand. She was nearly flat-bottomed. They had a big Dutch tug come over. The tide was coming in and lapping round the ship. Another half an hour and she was in about 3 feet of water. They started the main engines just at the right moment by luck. And up in the air went 2 or 3 tons of sand from the propellers. And she waddled, thought she was going over once. And I don't know whether it was God or what, but she slid down the beach into deeper water. I was standing watching her with Ronan O'Reilly. He flung his arms round my neck and he said, "What a wonderful sight, Mr. Scatton."
Caroline, son of the mission!
A desperate race against time and tide to save the stranded pop pirate ship Radio Caroline was going on off Frinton, Essex today. There were fears that the 480-ton ship, swept ashore by gales, would break up or be flung against the sea wall. A tug and tender were standing by at Harwich, and another was reported on its way from Holland to help refloat the ship.
Although Radio Caroline's ship was back on the air, the hull had been badly damaged and repairs were necessary. The ship had to be towed to Holland, so Radio Caroline South was off the air. Mrs. Britt Wagner, the owner of a Swedish station, Radio Sid, came to the rescue. She offered Ronan O'Reilly the use of the ship, the Cheetah 2. Ronan accepted, and on the 31st of January 1966, the new ship arrived at a position off Frinton. Within a few weeks, Radio Caroline was back on the air.
Caroline, the sound of the nation.
It was not until the 5th of April, 1966, that the Mi Amigo returned. It had been completely overhauled and fitted with a new 50,000-watt transmitter on 259 meters. Programs started 2 weeks later, and for a few days were relayed from both radio ships.
Before I get underway with the action show, let me tell you that Radio Caroline now has action on a new wavelength, and that's on the Mi Amigo. They're doing 10 test transmissions, I beg your pardon, on 259 metres on the medium wave right now. So, although it saddens me to have you leave me on 199, why don't you switch over the dial and listen to the station of the nation?
Newsbeat, presenting Caroline headline news and weather.
Radio Caroline was now on full power and had the largest offshore radio audience, 8.8 million listeners. But there were now 10 offshore stations broadcasting from ships and marine structures outside British territorial waters. The British government reacted by introducing to Parliament the Marine Etc. Broadcasting Offences Bill. It made it illegal for British citizens to work for, supply or advertise on a pirate station. The future of Caroline seemed uncertain.
Is your name Michael A. Hearn?
Micah Hearn.
Splendid.
Yeah.
You sometimes refer to yourself as your DJ Michael A., I understand.
Well, sometimes, yes.
Excellent, yes. Yes. Well, I've got a warrant here for your arrest, sir.
You've got a what?
I have reason to believe that on April the 1st last, and on several occasions prior to that, you broadcast a programme called the Mike Hearn Show from Radio Caroline. By so doing, you are guilty of an offence under the Marine and Broadcasting Offences Bill. I must therefore ask you to accompany me to the station, sir.
No, really, you must be joking. Come on, you must be, really.
You, British subject, sir?
British? Yes, I'm British, yeah, British through and through, you know, land of hope and glory. I love Britain, really, you know, send her victorious, happy and glorious.
That does it, sir. I'm afraid you'll have to come with me.
The government's Marine Offences Bill has now had its final reading. A basic freedom is at stake. The freedom of a British subject to work where he wants to.
Caroline decided it would continue to operate after the bill became law. Arrangements were made to transfer the offices to Holland.
Something that isn't understood by a lot of people, but the the European Broadcasting Union puts out a chart of stations that are legit and illegit as they see it. Not legal and illegal, but legit and illegit. In other words, operating within the Copenhagen Plan and outside the Copenhagen Plan. And in fact, I think there's something like 580 or something stations in the European EBU operation. And of that, over 300 of them are in the illegit section. So we are in the illegit section, obviously. In other words, not complying to the 48 Copenhagen Plan. But of course, we weren't there in 48, right, to agree to the wavelength. So we weren't, obviously we can't be in breach of it. Now, on the other hand, there are many stations, countries, delegations, who were there at the 1948 plan and are in breach. So that on that basis, Caroline is as legitimate as about 300 other stations, and in fact even more legitimate than the great majority of those, because they are of countries that did attend the Copenhagen Conference and then went back and broke it. So I would think that on a legit basis, on a legit, illegit basis, we are more legit than a majority of the stations that are operating outside the Copenhagen Plan, which agreed wavelengths.
Come in. Yes?
Ian, are you the one who's working on the Pirates Bill?
Well, yes, I've got something to do with it, I have, yes.
Well, I've got a proposition for you, my boy.
Go on.
Don't wait for this bill to go through, it might miss. Now, you know how the boats are on the outside of the 3-mile limit?
Yes, we can't touch them out there, I know.
Well, I propose to bring them within to 2 miles of the coast.
And then we could nab them. Go on.
Well, most of the pirates are on the east coast. Using my machines and equipment at very reasonable prices, we will set up outboard motors along the west coast and shift England and Scotland 1 mile to the east. Thus, the pirates will be within the 3-mile limit already.
And then we can prosecute them. Hello, Harold.
The 14th of August, 1967, became the deadline date for the offshore stations, and some DJs decided to leave.
It's going to be good to see the old sights of Liverpool Street Station tonight at 5:45, I'll tell you that. I've been out here 2 weeks, 13 months, and this is 2 weeks of doing 2 shows a day. So, if you're in the neighborhood, why don't you drop down to Liverpool Street Station tonight about 5:45? I'll be there.
Some of us, of course, are leaving for the very last time. And it usually happens, you know, as soon as Edwards wants to go off on shore leave, the weather is going to blow up. And we've got a force 8 gale out here, something like that at the moment, and it's blowing up even worse. I pity the lads who've got to stay out here, really. 20 and a half minutes now before the hour of 1 o'clock, right here on the Telly Tom Rivers Lunchtime Show. Just had a look outside, in actual fact, and our tender has just drawn alongside the good ship Caroline with a great big kapow, and the Admiral, Robbie Dale, and Sir Johnny Walker are on it, looking a bit, little bit seasick at the moment, and there are about 2 million newspaper reporters out there, I think.
Roger Day takes up the story.
So I came off on that last tender, you know, and that was something I'm glad I didn't miss. I'd have liked to have been on the ship when it went illegal, but it was good to see all the people at Liverpool Street, because our train got in, the train before the Radio London train got in. Liverpool Street was a mass of faces. I don't know how many people it takes to fill it up, but it was full. And we got police escort to a taxi and that. It was great.
All the other stations closed down, and again, Caroline was alone. All advertising had to come from abroad, and the ship would have to be tendered from the continent.
This is Caroline South on 259 meters in the medium wave band, the continuing sound of free radio, and your future in commercial radio.
And tonight, at 6 o'clock, you can hear the Admiral himself, Robbie Dale, on the airwaves, and at 9, it's Johnny Walker time, and at 12 midnight, well, just about everybody will be listening. We hope you won't be one who misses out. And that listening time, 12 midnight, on 259.
Now, tonight, I'm feeling a little bit nervous. I've got to admit it, I really am feeling a wee bit nervous, because all of a sudden, around about 3:05 this afternoon, it hit me like a ton of bricks, or like 15 million people. And I just realised, I thought, well, oddly enough, we appear to have doubled our audience this afternoon, because we are now the one and only. And a long time ago, that's the way the situation was. That's the way the situation was. So, I mean, I'm nervous. I'm stumbling over words already. But I'd like to say welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Caroline. And we'll try and love you just that little bit more.
8 minutes now before 11 o'clock. Come on now. Where are we?
Caroline, the sound of the land. Caroline, the sound of the nation.
With one free voice, they said.
Caroline.
As the midnight hour approached, the disc jockeys on board the Caroline South Ship, Johnny Walker, Robbie Dale and Ross Brown, feeling alone and nervous, prepared for one of the greatest moments in offshore radio's history. Then at midnight, the station changed its name and officially became Radio Caroline International.
This is your radio station. This is Radio Caroline. It is now 12 midnight. We want to say welcome to the new phase of broadcasting from Caroline. I want you to remember something. That is, a station that belongs to you and is right cannot ever be taken away from you. And there are a lot of people along the coast tonight who are flashing their headlamps at us. Very, very nice to see you. You've made us more happy, and I couldn't think it was possible, but you have made us more happy than we are already. Dale, what are you doing there?
I'm looking out the porthole window. It really is amazing to see all those cars out there and to know that we're not alone in this our most important moment. It's tremendous.
Of course we're not alone, you
freak. I've just been outside and all the, you know, the lights are flashing across the water, and it really is a tremendous sight to see. It really is.
Let's say a couple of thank yous now. Robbie and myself would like to thank our leader, Mr. Ronan O'Reilly, and Mr. Philip Solomon, all who've worked for Radio Caroline to make it possible for us to sit here and speak to you now. Also to thank the many, many people who have been with Caroline since that Easter Sunday, way back in 1964. And we are still here because you have given us such tremendous support. And we want to say thank you. And we know, naturally enough, we're going to have your support for a long, long time to come.
Radio Caroline now had an audience of 20 million, the largest commercial station in the world, a figure that has never been surpassed.
This is Radio Caroline International, the home of the British.
Explosion. The Marine Defences Bill applied to Caroline South on the 15th of August. It didn't apply to us until the end of August. So we were virtually, everybody was saying that we were free for 2 weeks longer. We even came off and we played a game of football with St. Helens GPO team. This is after the Marine Defences Bill had been signed. Then after the end of August, we, of course, had to, instead of taking the 40-minute trip from the boat to Ramsey, we had to take our 18-hour, at the best of times, trip to Dundalk in Southern Ireland. And at the worst, it would take something like 3 days.
International, the station with the happy difference.
They flew me out to Amsterdam, and I went out on that awful tender ride from Maiden to Harwich. It was terrible. It used to take 16 hours in good conditions, and 23 and 24 hours in bad conditions.
Station that's all hearts.
The station with the happy difference.
And we love you.
Caroline International.
Hey, sing along, kid.
10987654321.
1111. What's happening, pussycat?
We present
the Admiral Robbie Dale.
He's here. He's there. He's everywhere.
It's Sunday on Radio Caroline International, and for the next 3 hours, we present the American Hot 100 Show.
Let's go, Britain!
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
This is the Roger Day Show.
25 minutes now away from the hour of 4 o'clock. Must confess, didn't feel very good when I came on the air this afternoon. Not sort of, you know, ill physically or that, but just sort of down, low, you know, no mail or anything. There was no tender, and I thought, oh, I must try and cheer up. But it's funny, as soon as I get on the 259 Smile on your dial radio, bang, powy, and ka-crunch, all that kind of thing. I'm all alive and go-go. Just to remind you who's sitting in for Stevie Mack on a Tuesday.
It's Roger Day on the go-go.
Am I really? Now, come on.
I always listening to Roger Day in the morning. I put something in the oven for 10 minutes and relax to the sounds of the Roger Day Show.
He's a go-go! The Goon Maldoon on 259.
I remember when I first got on the ship, I met Robbie Dale, you know, and by this time the station was quite big time. And Robbie sort of met me on the gangplank and just sort of said, well, who sent you, and, you know, what station have you been with? And I said, well, nothing, you know, I've just done discotheques. And he went, oh, go to bed. I'll call you later. And then at 12 o'clock he did call me, and I did 12 till 6 for about a month.
This is Caroline International on 259, Great Britain's only free commercial radio station.
Also, actually getting out to the ship, I did expect a big ocean liner. I really didn't expect this sort of, what, rather Mickey Mouse little ship. I sort of dreamt up this big sort of white ocean-going vessel and all plush stuff. And when we, in fact, went out on the tender, it was only it was the offshore one, I think. And it sort of, I was a bit disillusioned at the time, but the station still sounded good. I thought we were still going to get out to a monster ship. And we got along to the ship that really wasn't much bigger than the tender. And it was got awful rough. It must have been about a 4-6 or something. And it just had to go out. There was no more tenders that day, and we just had to get on board. And this big Dutchman said, you've got to jump now. You know, there was no question of not jumping. We just had to leap across to the other ship.
Music!
And don't forget, if you want a menu read out between 15 after 1 and 20 after 1, write to Maldoon's Mad Menus, Radio Caroline International, Amsterdam, and blah, blah, Amsterdam, Holland, OK? But if you want to write to me and say how lovely I am, I don't mind. You don't have to write a menu or write a request. Just write and say how lovely Spangles is.
Going back in time on the sounds of the nation, it's the Caroline Flashback.
Music!
Bulletin, 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 bulletin!
Andy Archer takes up the story.
Well, I think the funniest experience that ever happened to me was back in 1967. We'd been having a purge on calling each other by female names, and consequently Johnny Walker became Joanna Walker, and Stevie Merrick became Marjorie Merrick, and Roger Day became Rachel Day, etc., etc. It was just pure fun. And one day I was reading the news at 5 o'clock, and Roger Day said over the air, "It's now 5 o'clock and time to join aide de camp for the news." And I read out the headlines, not realising what he had said. And just as I was starting on the main story, it hit me. And I just burst out laughing and fell on the floor. Well, I must have been on the floor for about a minute laughing. And anyway, I pulled myself to my seat to look next door, and Roger wasn't there. And I stood up, and he was down on the floor in a ball, rolling with laughter, which started me off again. And it was about 5 past 5 before any sanity came back to the air.
This has been Caroline Newsbeat.
Early on the 3rd of March, 1968, the tug Utrecht pulled alongside Caroline North.
We heard this bang on the side of the ship, a gentle bang on the side of the ship. And, of course, you know, being very curious at that time of the morning, especially where we were situated, we wanted to know what it was. Before we could even get up, to go outside to see what it was all about. These great, big, huge, powerful Charles Atlas type of Dutchmen came on board. Well, one of these men immediately went up to the captain's cabin. The others came into the mess room and started speaking in Dutch, which we couldn't understand what was going on. The Dutch crewmen later told us that we had been boarded by representatives of the Weissmuller Company. Not to worry about anything, nobody was going to be harmed, blah, 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 you know, the usual spiel about everything's going to be all right. So myself, the chief engineer and the captain and the chief representative of this boarding party, we had a little get-together up in the captain's cabin. We were told by the Weissmuller man that we weren't going on the air next morning, that we're being towed away to Holland for our own safety because the ship hadn't been docked and checked for a few years. The chief engineer was told to hand the crystals in to ensure that we couldn't broadcast. And we objected strongly. We were told simply that the ship was going to Holland, and that was that. And unbeknown to us, our brothers, or our sister ship down in the south, was boarded that same morning.
Roger Day takes up the story.
I was just going on the air about 5 o'clock, and I never got on the air. As you know, it's just tape music, sort of warming up the transmitter. Everyone's crying their eyes out. It's ridiculous. Grown men were sort of weeping and, yeah, not nice. Because I think, despite what they said, we could see it was the end.
The MV Caroline and the MV Mi Amigo were illegally towed to Amsterdam and impounded.
Well, in fact, what happened was there was a row between the Weissmuller brothers internally, of which we were totally unaware. And because one of the brothers was involved with us as an investor, as it were, the other brother, his older brother, got very uptight at that. This was a row they were having, personal row. And one of the games was, all right, I'll take your ships away to the other brother. The other brother, thinking that was a complete bluff, didn't pass it on to me or anyone else. And literally sent out the tugboats. Their crews were on there anyway, so there wasn't any sort of pirate grab situation in a way, although technically they were committing piracy. But it was absolutely to do with a row between the brothers, unless somebody got to the older brother, right, and said, zap, there's X amount, get rid of those ships. Now that is not, you know, we all know there are setups that do play those kind of games.
It seemed that an era of free radio, pioneered by Caroline, had ended.
The loss of Caroline was much bigger to me than I ever realized. Than I ever thought was possible. You know, after that March 68 and went, you know, it was just taken away. I mean, I thought it was so unjust. I mean, anyway, right, that you could, you know, having built something up that had an audience of 20 million from nothing, you know, you get a couple of old hawks and shit, and suddenly out there, and suddenly there's like, you know, 20 million people at the other end getting, you know, enjoying something, getting a buzz in a dull, you know, fairly dull lives, or, you know, lives that are not full of that much excitement. Suddenly there's a bit of pleasure for them in the situation. It had a very big impact. It had really hit me very hard. I was really very depressed. It's really extraordinary, because I wouldn't have, you know, I would have said, yes, I'll miss it tremendously, because it wasn't just a business to me. It was a whole kind of concept and way of life.
But even in this century, people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Mahatma Gandhi, and Martin Luther King have shown us that if we strive for freedom, we can all attain it. This is the spirit of Caroline, and in the same way, this spirit can never be stifled.